Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's Toy Department time. We are back. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you, sir? Are you still on paternity leave?
I am still on paternity leave. We have so far successfully transitioned my almost two and a half year old to preschool. So all is looking good as of now, and I expect to be back at work on Tuesday.
Yeah, just in time for the Giants not to be in first place anymore.
Oh, I don't care about that. It's just in time for football is what I thought you were going to say. And yes, you're correct.
I guess it is. I guess it is week one when you get back next week, huh?
Yeah, baby. Let's go.
And have we figured out Trey Lance is going to be a part of the festivities next week, or is he going to be sitting on the sidelines? Do we know that yet?
I think it's a little of both. I think there's almost no chance. Like, he's going to be part of the festivities, as you say. I don't think
if he's healthy to play, right? Isn't that the he broke his finger or whatever, right? or chipped his finger or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is okay finger wise. He's been practicing.
Oh yeah, he's gonna play then. He'll play.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small chip in his finger, I guess, is what they're saying, and. You know, they might just decide to be cautious and sit him week one anyway, because I know they want to start Garoppolo, and that makes it easy to not, you know, if they deactivate him or something, that's one less thing to argue about, I guess, you know?
Yeah. I drafted dudes for my fantasy team. I'm not playing either one of them this week, I don't think. It's a 2 QB league, so guys like that play.
Yeah. I'm in
so
one
I'm
of those.
Very, I'm monitoring the situation closely. Because I invested heavily in Mr. Lance.
Oh, I see. I think that's good. I think that investment is a good investment. So, yeah, I would feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I'm a believer. Okay. Let's. I guess we should get to talking TV.
Let's do it.
It's all TV this week, right?
Yeah. Football hasn't even started yet. What are we doing?
Let's start with the culture stuff, right?
Sure.
I'll let you pick between Vacation Friends, Nine Perfect Strangers, and Only Murders in the Building where we should start, because I don't know that I have an obvious one.
Let's do Vacation Friends. I think we can hammer this out pretty quickly. You want me to do my 30-second spiel?
Sure, you can do your 30-second spiel.
I pretty much start smiling as soon as John Cena appears on screen, and then when he talks, I giggle. So I guess I'm in the bag for John Cena as an actor. This is not something I necessarily expected to say. As a film, this is an incredibly stupid comedy that I found pretty entertaining. I wouldn't blame anyone for not enjoying it or not finding it as entertaining as I did, you know, because it's goofy and silly and there's nothing to it whatsoever. So I'm not gonna like stand for this, as the kids say, but I did quite enjoy myself.
Well, now I'm upset for letting you go first,
because that's exactly what you were gonna say.
Well, I was definitely gonna lead with I think I'm in the bag for John Cena.
Yeah, I mean, the guy is just funny. Like, it just works. Him as an actor just really works, you know? And it's I don't know, you know, not unlike The Rock, like physically, I don't know how many different things you can cast John Cena as. But as like former Army Ranger Green Beret guy who likes to do drugs and create meaningful male friendships, he's hilarious.
Yeah, he really, you know, understands, I think, how to use his physicality.
Yeah,
And particularly for comedic effect.
Yeah, Which makes sense as a wrestler, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. It's yeah, it's very interesting. And I think he does, like, you know, he can play the oversensitive guy very well, uh-huh. You know, when he wants to do that, or like the mystical guy. There are some limits, I think, you know what I mean? But he leans in, and it's just charming, you know? Yep. He's figured out it's funny if he can get his naked butt into every movie he's in, and usually it is.
It is, yeah. Right. I mean, it's like this whole film. It's a list of things that are, like, pretty much always funny and not in a super creative or special way, but gosh, I'm not mad at it at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's a winning cast here between Laurel and, Yvonne Orji.
Yes.
And I'm forgetting her name, but, our girl from Search Party.
Yes. She's really funny too. And again, like, it's not like I watch Search Party and then I watch this and I think, man, she has range. No, she has a thing. Meredith Hagner is her name.
Yep. And it's a different character from the Search Party character.
It's different, but there's a vibe she hits.
It's the same vibe.
Yeah. She hits the vibe perfectly. And I'm not, like, this movie knows what it is. I'm not going to complain about the fact that there's very little depth to, like, a literal vacation comedy.
Yeah. Now that said, though, I do think the combination of the four of them are winning and sell the movie, if you
Hold
will.
Hold on, wait. Let me steal your thunder again. It could have been 20 minutes shorter.
Could have been that, but that's not what I was gonna say. I do think that it's kind of like B minus level Wedding Crashers from like a story, just even joke standpoint. You know
Correct.
What I mean? Like it's
Correct.
Just. You know, yes, it is. It's not attempting to be anything much more than silly, but you can do silly better than this movie does. But it works because you like the people involved in there, you know, and they make it funny. You know what I mean? Like they sell what they are given. So, you know, so it's an enjoyable watch. It's also a forgettable one, right? Like you're not going to check into this movie ever again, are you?
No, probably not. But that's okay, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Like I had a good time. I have no complaints.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we're in exactly the same place. Like, sure. You could, I'm not going to call this like a dumb comedy classic, right? You know,
correct.
And I don't know how, frankly, I don't know how well most of those hold up. Anyway, you know, like
compare this to like Barb and Star. Like I thought that was a, you know what I mean? Like if you're just looking for like dumb comedies, like that was a much more interesting kind of funny dumb comedy than this was. I like this.
I don't know if it was much more funny. It was definitely much more interesting. And I guess that's worth something. I don't know how much it's worth though. You know, like if we're doing letter grades, that's like maybe a half, you know, that's a plus or a minus or whatever.
Yeah,
as opposed
from B to a B. Although I think I liked Barb and Star more than a B, I would say.
Yeah, but I think that's like, I don't know if I would call it more ambitious, more artistically ambitious, if not more like thematically ambitious.
Yeah.
Don't you think? Because it was just as stupid.
More artistically ambitious, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like it went for some stuff, and this doesn't really go for anything other than goofy comedy.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Only Murders in the Building.
So how many episodes did you watch?
I watched.
How many are
well,
there?
Well, there are three.
Okay.
And I'm just going to say two. I watched the third, but I fell asleep, which is not the fault of the show.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Let's say two.
We watched two, and in a totally different way in terms of like what the show is and what's happening. Like there's a mystery, there's murders. But in some ways I want to start what I have to say the same way I started Vacation Friends, which is this show rides on the charm of its three actors. And through two episodes, that is sufficient.
I think there's a little more happening here than just the charm of the three actors, although certainly that's the selling point. But it just hasn't, through two episodes, it hasn't fully developed. And I mean that sort of exploration of true crime culture and, you know, and the podcast and all that stuff around that.
Right.
While there's a mystery sort of simultaneously unfolding. And I just don't know. It's just hard through two episodes to know enough about if that mystery is compelling enough to sort of pull that off, you know?
Yeah.
To this point, but I'm intrigued by the idea of it.
Yeah. Right. I think I'm just echoing you, but like, it's definitely a, I'm not sure because we haven't gotten far enough and I'm hopeful, right? Like, I'm not sure if the mystery is going to pull together in a meaningful way because there's just too many questions, but I'm hopeful. It seems to be a well-written, clever show.
I am hopeful. My one thing is it seems like the way the mystery is sort of parceling out so far, right, seems to be a lot of sort of machinations almost by the script writers, right? Like, as in the characters know more about the mystery than the audience does in some sense, right? Like, they're just sort of slowly revealing, like, oh, yeah, Selena Gomez, like.
Right.
You know,
she does anyway, right? I mean,
involved, right. Yeah, they don't know anymore, right? Exactly. She seems to know more. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And so they're kind of revealing these things in bits and drabs. And I, you know, you get the feeling, right? I mean, the Martin Short character obviously has, these sort of financial secrets that are kind of starting to come to life. And I have a feeling Steve Martin's character has some secrets as well. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and we've already had the sort of red herring or not of the speech about his mom that may or may not be real.
Right. Exactly. So, I'm interested in all that, but I find the three main characters pretty compelling. And it's like, I'm not the biggest Martin Short fan.
Really?
But I just feel like he mostly does the same guy. You know what I mean? Like, I was excited to see him in the morning show, you know, because I just felt like, all right, he's doing something a little bit different than the Martin Short that I see all the time. And this one is very much the Martin Short I see all the time. Like, you know, like him playing an ex-Broadway guy over the top wearing fancy coats. I'm like, you know, we've done this. I've done this.
At the same time, isn't this version a little more emotionally complex than the average.
It is. And I'm not here to shit on Martin Short. Like, I mean,
no, I see. I hear what you're saying.
The old 60 minute Saturday Night Live bit is, you know, hilarious. Or like, you know, he's definitely done some funny things. I just,
but I hear what you're saying. He has a especially in partnership with Steve Martin, they have a very specific sort of vibe that they do, you know?
Yeah. And it's kind of like Eugene Levy almost, you know what I mean, right? Like,
yeah, but with a little more.
I'm less tired of Eugene Levy, but Eugene Levy's doing a guy, you know what I mean?
They're very different guys, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, but regardless, but Steve Martin, I think, is just an effing genius. So
he is, and you know what? Selena Gomez is pretty good.
I agree. She might be the best thing in this through two episodes.
Like, she's an interesting actress, I think. She is the most interesting and mysterious character, which probably helps.
Yeah. I mean, like, the way they opened that with the three of them kind of, like, doing
their monologue
about New York was
that was funny. And honestly, like, the whole sort of structure, and I know we sort of alluded to how much of this is us sort of figuring out the mystery and the secrets of the characters, but like the way they've put it together is it's compelling. Like, I want to know. So I feel like pretty good job all around to this point.
Yeah. Do you feel that way? Pretty good job all around about 9 Perfect Strangers.
That's not how I would say it.
I was gonna say that too. How many of these did you watch?
I have not watched the one that came out a couple days ago, but otherwise we're caught up. So three or four. Okay.
All right. So I'm on two for this one too.
Oh, so I'm deeper into it than you are. Do you know the sort of big reveal you're about to get, I think, in the next episode?
I might be three into it, actually. Now that I think about it. Let me go look at that.
Well, answer this question. What do you know about, like, what's going on from the you know, resort end of things?
I mean, I know that someone's, like, threatening her. And...
No. I mean, like, in terms of what they're doing.
Yeah, I must only be two then. I don't know that big reveal.
Okay, so you just know they're, like, giving everybody smoothies and...
like, drugs, right?
But do you know what they're... Do you know anything about the drugs?
I don't.
Okay. Yeah, so you'll find out a little more about the drugs. So, yeah, I've watched four because episode five came out yesterday. And I'm intrigued. There's a handful of really interesting performances. Speaking of being in the bag for actors, I am also in the bag for Samara Weaving. And I think, like, this is sort of a bizarre take on the type of character we've seen her before. But it's different and interesting. And both her and her husband, whose name I am forgetting, but who we've definitely seen before in, like, Unreal and a handful of things. Melvin Gregg is his name.
Can we go back to you being in the bag for Samara Weaving?
I love Samara Weaving. I think it's because of what's the show we watched on Showtime with Frankie Shaw?
Smilf?
Yes. I just love her in Smilf.
Okay, so that may be the difference.
You didn't like her in Smilf? Oh, you didn't really watch Smilf, right?
Yeah, I wasn't that into Smilf.
Yeah. I mean, she was in Three Billboards.
I honestly thought that you were talking about Samara Wiley at first. And I was like,
no,
I don't think she did this.
I like Samara Wiley. I like her too. But no, I've seen her. She was in the Bill and Ted movie. Like, I've only seen her a handful of times, but I find her delightful. She's so, this is perhaps, betraying my own personal biases more than anything, but she's just tends to play parts that are more interesting and complicated than her look would suggest, I guess.
I think that you know, my feeling through this point of it is the casting is really strong, right? I mean,
yeah.
There's you've got a lot of heavyweights. I mean, some genuine stars here.
Michael Shannon is fantastic too. I mean, there's so many people in this who are just really doing it. And Bobby Cannavale is this. You want to talk about someone playing a sort of different role?
Yes,
he's not a believable tight end, but everything else about that role.
I was gonna say, did not see him as a tight end.
No, they should have just made him a wide receiver. Like, I don't understand why they would even do that or cast The Rock. Like, you can't have Bob, but whatever. That's a complication that nobody but a handful of football fans are going to be annoyed by. So whatever.
Yeah. Who watches football?
Well, lots of people watch football, but I'm not sure how many care about the realism of tight end characters.
Tight end. There's some great, you know, supporting players too, right? Like, you know,
Manny
Jacinto. Yeah. And, Melvin Gregg, who was, in the second season of,
Unreal. Where were you when I just said that?
Did you say that?
Just now. Like, less than 3 minutes ago, I was like, you know, the guy from Unreal. What's his name? Oh, yeah, Melvin Gregg.
Oh, no, I definitely did not hear that. Was that before Bobby Cannavale or after?
Before.
All right. Anyway, Regina Hall's in this.
Yes, and she is also playing. Now, that's another thing. Like, and this is a common Hollywood problem, but, like, believing Regina Hall as, like, the, you know, her husband can't look at her anymore, housewife that, like, lost her fastball is pretty ridiculous, but it's Hollywood, so what are you going to do?
Right. That's right. What are you going to do? So, yeah, and then you got Nicole Kidman and Melissa McCarthy running around as well. So,
and Melissa McCarthy also is... I don't want to say playing against type, but, like, it's not an easy, you know, when she's doing the like Melissa McCarthy comedy, it just always seems like such an easy deal for her. But this is like, this is a different acting performance, right?
Yeah. And I think this whole show, and the reason kind of I wanted to bring up sort of the depth of this cast, is that this movie's really letting all these people cook, right?
You know what I mean?
There's a lot to chew into for all of that. That said, you know, it's obviously pretty easy to compare this. American Vandal, by the way, was the thing I was looking for from Melvin Gregg.
There you go.
Yeah. I also forgot he was in High Flying Bird.
And Unreal. I keep mentioning Unreal.
The obvious comparison here, right, is you know, besides Big Little Lives and the White DNA Lotus. that show shares with this one, is White Lotus, right? You know, and I think it suffers timing wise from having come out like just right after White Lotus, because it doesn't, the writing doesn't pop in that same way. Even though they're kind of trying to do different kinds of things, it doesn't quite pop in that same way or nearly as quickly. Would you say?
I would, but I would also say that, and maybe I'm being unnecessarily friendly to Nine Perfect Strangers, but at least to this point, what the show is actually doing and about strikes me as so different. Like, the surface similarities are obvious, right?
Right.
You know, a bunch of wealthy people in a fancy place that should be paradise, but they're all dealing with their own problems, right? But these people are in a place specifically designed to deal with those problems, and they're all being handled by this, you know, guru or whatever you want to call Nicole Kidman, in a way that there's more of like a mystery of what's happening here. What is it with these people? It feels more mysterious than just like character development. So that's not necessarily a good thing in the long run, but it makes me want to reserve judgment a little more.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I look, what, you know, obviously White Lotus kind of had a mystery, but not nearly as it's just not as central, I think, into the ways that, right, like...
No, really not central at all. If you think about it, the White Lotus mystery was just a thing that, like, hung over the show, but didn't have anything to do with the show, almost.
Yeah. This is going to be about revealing backstories and then also maybe revealing, I guess, who's threatening Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, maybe. And potentially why, I guess? I don't know. Yeah, in some ways, I'm hopeful that this will end up even better than White Lotus, because you may remember I didn't like how that ended as much as you did. So I don't know. I am a little more. I guess here's the one way to put it. Like you said, the characters and the writing is not as compelling in the first handful of episodes of this as it was in White Lotus. But to me, the plot and story are more compelling.
Oh, interesting. I think maybe getting into degrees that the two of us enjoyed White Lotus.
Right.
But had White Lotus been available, you know, all at once on a streaming service, I think I would have devoured it in a weekend.
Well, just the fact that you think this was all available is a clue to the fact that you did not get that into watching it, because it's week to week.
No, White Lotus. I'm talking about White Lotus. If White Lotus was available, I would have devoured it week to week. I'm aware that this is not all.
Oh, I thought you were saying, but you didn't devour this week.
I would not either. Like, you know what I mean? Like there are episodes that are available that I haven't watched yet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, exactly. That adds up.
I'm not enjoying it, and I, you know, will probably finish it. But, like, White Lotus, I was hooked. You know what I mean? I couldn't wait to talk about it with people and then watch the next one. So,
well, and I think that's the thing that that we were both kind of just saying is, like, that is the reason, and we were both like that at the beginning with White Lotus, and the reason is we found the characters and writing just like gripping, and that it's not quite the same here, but. And I'm not sure after two or three episodes that a sort of deep, slowly revealed mystery is going to have the same I got to go back effect as like, wow, I can't get enough of these characters. But I think it could potentially pay off better in the end. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not anywhere near ready to give up on this show.
Yeah.
By any means. Yeah. So I guess we'll find out as we go. You ready to talk some challenge? Because I'm ready to talk.
You know I am.
All right. So the rookies have not gotten any smarter.
But are we really, if we're going to talk about people being stupid, we're going to start with the rookies?
You want to start with Fessy, I presume?
Honestly, I could not tell you what was going through that idiot's head. He tried to explain it, and I don't understand it. Like, you're going to torch your whole alliance because Amber B was mad at you for being awful to her last year? I don't... Like, Josh is telling you, I talked to her, she's in, we're good. Your supposed best friend is telling you that we got this. Just do what we planned.
This is a strange show because Josh is really the voice of reason throughout. I mean, you know, obviously he loses his shit at the very end.
Well, but I got to say, like, throughout this show, Fessy at one point in this show said, you know, Josh, he did win Big Brother and, like, he sees all the angles. And when he said it, I was like, Josh? And then he was totally seeing all the angles. He had it. He had the whole thing on lock. And Fessy, who was the one who told me that Josh sees all the angles, was like, nah.
I got this. I can't play your game, Josh. I got to play my game.
I yelled at the TV, he's trying to get you to play your game. what does he think his game is?
Okay, but I wanna also, though, because I feel like this needs to happen. I think we need to rope Casey into this discussion. Like, Casey, smart, strategic, normally pretty unflappable, I feel like is almost just as guilty. Like, when you listen to her talk about this Big Brother alliance, and it's from the start, it's like, well, and Amber B is at the bottom, and she's always going to be at the bottom. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
Like, there's only room for three people in your alliance? Like, I don't get it. Like, you're all in Big Brother. It's better to have numbers. It's better to have more people to protect each other. She's a friggin' champ. And, she's pretty good at this game. She keeps showing us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Including, again, last night. So,
Devin is in your alliance. And you're saying Amber B is at the bottom?
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, what's the point of having an alliance if you're just going to be like, you know, there's no point for Amber B to be in the alliance if you're just going to say, well, you're at the bottom of this alliance.
Yes, you know, and Josh did all that work to, like, bring her back into the fold, and these idiots just ruined it that fast. And now I don't even know where the alliances are.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it at all. I don't get it at all. It's strange. And, you know, I get the sense that afterwards, you know, Fessy gets that he screwed up.
Right.
But only in the sense of, like, well, now Amber's going to be coming for me. Like, not, I don't think he really even sees, like, writ large how he screwed it up. You know what I mean? Maybe
because
now hindsight on Twitter or whatever, but, like.
Right. And now he says that thing where he's like, oh, I guess I got to figure out how to be cool with Josh again or we're going to have a real problem. And it's like. He told you to do the thing, and if you'd just done the thing and put the rookies in like you should have, you wouldn't be on bad terms. Like, you created a problem where one did not exist.
And, like, if you really don't trust her, come for her later. Like, there's no reason
plenty you have to of time.
Like, there is a lot. We have not removed the wheat from the chaff on this show, right? You know what I mean? Like,
no, and in fact,
plenty of time to go back and take care of this business if right. it's that important to you.
And it was made even potentially easier because there's like, you know, this now created an all rookie team again. And if you had put the two, like you were always going to be able to do that. So yeah. I don't know what I honestly, it's funny because if you had made me say before this season started, like strategically, who would you ride with between Fessy and Josh? I probably would have said Fessy just out of just like, well, Josh is just such a lunatic. I can't imagine he can sort out strategy, but he totally can.
Yeah.
And they, and like the idiots he's working with ignored him. It was, and then of course he went full Josh and got overly emotional.
Yeah. Like when you think about Fessy, right? Like he's good at challenges, right?
Yeah.
So that has put him in a position to assert strategy a lot.
Right.
I don't know if he's done all that much with that position. He's clearly screwed up a number of times.
Well, that's the thing. I would argue, in fact, he has done too much with that position.
Yeah.
You're doing a lot too much.
The good moves that he's made have been driven by other people in his alliance, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Casey is here as a whisperer.
Yeah. And just, you're right, though. Casey was weird on this one, too. Just like, well, if Amber's out, I don't care. Not realizing, like, who's left in your alliance? And how much value does it have if it's just you and Fessy?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That part of it didn't make any sense to me at all. And it's like, if I were them, I'd go get Devin and Kyle, you know what I mean? And try to, I'd be expanding the circle, not shrinking the circle. Why are you shrinking your own circle?
Exactly. Okay.
What did Fessy Fan to Be was going to do to him? I don't get any of it.
No, it makes no sense. Amber B is never going to have the power to put you in. Like, Amber B is going to come for you. So, if she's coming for you, like, yeah, it's not good. But she was certainly not in a place where she was, like, rallying people against you. And she is now. Now it's going to be, look at this fucking snake. The whole next episode is going to be, look at this fucking snake.
Yeah. You know, but of course he's going to probably win challenges, right? Like people, you know, Fessy is like CT in that way, right? Like you may want to come for him, but you really want to think about how. Although I have to say, right? Like, I feel like the producers certainly set up an elimination that Huey was going to have a shot in, right? Like, and you kind of have to hope that they're going to do the solid of an elimination that levels the physical playing field if you get him in there, right?
But do you think they do that? Or do you think they are, like, I feel like
I do.
You don't
I
think
do.
They're planned ahead?
I think that if they did, you know, if they were like, all right, Coryell and Huey, tonight we're playing Hall Brawl. You know what I mean? Like, then I don't think they think that would be very good television. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, okay. That makes sense. But on the other hand, sometimes we do see that, right? Like the total mismatch. So I just wonder if we're just overthinking it, and in reality, there's just only so many. You know, there's only so many.
They have all these eliminations, right, just set up, and they just decide which location to go to. You know what I mean?
But it's all the same location for elimination. So they have to, like, set it up, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I don't know. It could be either, but my instinct is that, like, it does feel sometimes like they set it up, especially that they set up the physical ones for the head-smashing people. But I think maybe what they do is they just save the physical ones for the end.
I bet it's kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like when you're doing a festival, right? And you have, you know, you have the gear kind of already set up, and then you just sort of roll it out, you know, so that the changes don't take that long.
Yeah.
I kind of bet like that. You know what I mean? Like, they have the stuff set up, and they can wheel it in or wheel it out. You know what I mean?
You may be right. But what I was going to say is sometimes I feel like it's just that there are only so many physical eliminations and they save them, like super physical ones, and they save them for late so that it's mostly people that would be competitive. But either way, certainly if this had been anything even resembling a hall brawl, Huey was going to get crushed. But I got to say, like, Huey continues to be the guy most likely to be terrible and then generally is better than you expect. Is that fair?
depends on how you define better.
I mean, he does a lot of screaming and freaking out, but like even when he was screaming and freaking out in the daily challenge in this episode, like he performed better than, you know, he was at least better than 20% of people or something, right?
Yeah, no, he did okay. I mean, I do think you put a target on your back with the screaming. Mm-hmm. You just do. You know what I mean? And that's why I felt Coryell was a little bit hard on himself.
But you know what?
In that instance. Because he had legit reason beyond, you know, the gay boy thing or whatever. And gay boy is the word that Huey used. I'm sorry, so I'm not trying to be glib.
Yeah, well, and Corey too, I think. But here's the problem with what you're saying, from my perspective, is even if, you know, sexuality was not necessarily the determining factor, all of the things, like it's all tied in, because the gay guy who shrieks at heights is just kind of folds into the stereotype, you know?
Right.
Even and though there is some
also least fit guy here, right? That's left, isn't he?
Is he less fit than Devin?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yes. Devin has been like, I was going to talk about this later in the show, and I have not seen any of this, but Devin has an OnlyFans page as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, Devin is like cut now. I'm telling you. And he's, you know, like these people work out because they know they're on the show. And then you saw the scene with Huey and CT where like Huey didn't even know what to do in the gym. You know what I mean? So
I thoroughly enjoyed that.
That was a great scene.
And I love that CT has aged into like helpful athletic mentor.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, for sure. He finds like a cute underdog every season now and is like, I like this person, I'm gonna help him out.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not Huey, it's Josh probably.
Josh is a little soft,
big dude, man. It's just
honestly, Kyle,
did you see the shots of Josh running though
with his hands all goofy?
He's so good.
Of course I did. Look, Huey, you're probably right. Huey's probably the physically.
I don't think it's close, unfortunately. I'm not
well,
trying, you know.
I guess, but like, you know, Kyle.
You know what I mean?
Kyle looks great, but he's in pretty mediocre shape. Like, I don't.
As the Warshaw guy said, you know what I mean? Popcorn muffins, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not totally sold on Devin physically. I'm not totally sold on Josh physically, although, like you said, he's much bigger. Probably right.
The vampire dude, maybe, I guess, is in that conversation.
Yeah, he's a vampire, though. So
yeah, I mean, but he's also, right. He's scary.
Just,
you know?
Can I just, Viva Romania. These two, like, Emmy wasn't much of a part of this episode, but Emmanuel is hilarious. Everything he says hilarious things in the ITMs, and then he's like, ah, just kidding. It's so funny.
Emmy's in trouble, though. Right?
Emmy's in big trouble. Yeah. And you know, Gabo's whole thing with Nani was funny, and one of the more interesting parts of this episode, just that Nani was like, you know what, he's just like muscles that listen, it's great. that was basically her take on him, is like, he's big and strong and he does what I say, I love working with him.
Do you think that they included that just so you would get how annoyed she would be to be selected by what's his nuts there at the end? Huey.
I gotta say, it's a weird choice by Huey.
I kind of got it. He wanted someone who had a good social game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And was obviously.
Nani doesn't have a great social game, though. But she's fine.
I don't know. I think social game's pretty good.
She's been there a long time. I've got with Anissa
in that.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I get it. I get it. I didn't have a problem with that.
Or Tori.
I did also enjoy.
I might have gone with Tori.
Every single person in the house going, like, pointing at Devin.
Yes. Well, I mean, that was smart. And it works out for everybody, because the rookie who's down there wants a veteran, and all the veterans up top want to create a rookie team to pick on. So, again, that's why they could have sent anyone in. They didn't have to do the Amber B thing.
Right. I'm talking about the rookies are dumb, but now it's too late, right?
So, oh, they're screwed now.
Yeah, like, they don't have the numbers. There's no point in even banding together anymore. So,
right.
But they still turn on each other, like, right away.
So quickly.
They've all accepted their fate in the game, I guess. So,
well, it's funny, because we had sort of two examples here of how this happens. One is Fessy, like, getting in his own head and just being a dickhead. But the other is, like, Kyle just being dumb. Like, sometimes alliances break apart because someone's just stupid.
Yeah. If you're a rookie, is that what you're thinking? That you can just, well, if I can just stay in the game, maybe their alliance will implode and they'll take each other out somehow and I'll be left standing? Because otherwise, it just seems like, okay, yeah, you may outlast a couple of these other rookies, but then they're immediately going to turn on you, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm going to say it again, because I don't know if you – I feel like you didn't believe me the first time, but I'm just convinced it's a product of not thinking or not being able to think the game through at, like, the necessary level. Because these people – and even if they've watched, they get on the show and they run around like a chicken with their head cut off for 3 episodes, and then it's too late.
I think that, but then sometimes, like, it's like I see Esther and Fessy talking, and Esther going, like, you don't have to worry. You're a vet. I am a rookie. It's different for me, right? Like, so she has some awareness of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but
know, maybe
but
she's too late. I don't know.
It's a little late, and B, there's a difference between having an awareness of the fact that rookies are targets and having an awareness of the appropriate way to handle that situation, because not only do you have to figure it out, then you have to convince all the other rookies and rally them in time to actually get a vote taken care of.
I mean, I think the first 8 people to go in elimination were rookies, like,
pretty
none
much
of them picked up on it.
No, so. Again, they pick up on it, but I think what happens is they feel like, oh God, I'm a target. How do I save myself? The next step of, like, well, wait a second. What if I wasn't a target? How could I make that happen? They're just not ready to think the game at that level while it's happening. And and even if there's some of them who've watched and thought, like, oh man, I would handle that. Like, somehow it feels like boots on the ground. It just becomes a lot harder.
They're all going through. I don't know. It's just hard to watch them all. Just, they all just go along with their vet partner every time.
And I think there's also a fear that, like, well, this is my partner is the one person who has my back. And again, you have to take the extra mental step to get to, okay, but do they really? Because they could leave.
And, like, also, right, they could leave any time. Like, there's no – I don't understand why people, have this, like, partner loyalty other than that they're working together in the daily challenges. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, these people can and will leave you at any moment, and sometimes openly lobby to.
It's like weird desire to have a positive working relationship for no reason.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to me, I get what you're saying. I don't think you can chalk it all up to inexperience, though. You know what I mean? Like, you can chalk a lot of it up, but some of it's just, they're just being dumb.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe I'm giving them too much credit, assuming it's stupidity born out of inexperience as opposed to just born out of not having enough brain power.
Yep. All right, so who's your MVP for this episode?
God, that is so hard, but I want to give it – you know what? I want to give it to Josh on a certain level just for, like, getting the game. But is it crazy to give it to Amber B?
It's not. No, I don't think it is crazy to give it to Amber B.
I think I kind of wrote off her championship as like, well, she had a lot of help and, you know, then she got to run, which was good for her. But like, she is showing, and this is only her second season, right? Or third?
Yeah. Second.
I think it's second. Yeah. She's showing like she's good at this. Not only does she actually seem to be decent at building relationships and mending them when the other person is willing, but she's good at the challenges.
Yeah. I mean, she won a lot of eliminations last year. It wasn't like she just had a free ride.
Yeah. Right? And she kept her cool when Huey was freaking out and when they dropped the key and like they were trailing early on, like she really kept it even and kept Huey focused during the elimination. I give her a lot of credit.
Yeah. Did you feel like that elimination was one where they made it look closer than it was?
I think in the end they did. But at the beginning, Coryell and Michelle definitely jumped out to a lead.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they did. But then they got passed. Like, and then I think it was a pretty big lead, right? And then the whole key thing, they made it seem like, oh, this is their chance to catch up. But I don't ever really think that they got that close.
No, I don't think so either, because ultimately, like, getting the key, and also someone, I think it was Kyle, was like, oh my God, he did the splits to get the key. And then they showed the replay, and it's like he stuck his foot out and dragged a key. I do that at least twice a week when I drop my keys.
Yeah. Three elimination wins for Amber.
Including this or last year?
I believe that it was last year.
That's, yeah. Like I said, like, I think I unfairly downplayed what she did to get that title because she came in this season looking strong.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. No, sorry. That was not. She two last year, plus she won the final and then won this year. So
yeah. There you go. So, I mean, look, she's paying her dues and I'm impressed.
Yeah, I'm impressed. That's a fair choice. I had Esther.
She's great.
Because I just think, she's really tremendous. but I felt like she was kind of doing a lot of the work on that challenge. She's like the one rookie that seems pretty safe in this game, you know. And she's like, she definitely, like, also really, I think, kind of can, you know, runs the social side of it pretty well as well. So I had her, but I think her, to me, this was Josh's greatest episode of the entire time I've seen him on the show.
In terms, I tend to agree.
Ultimately, what he did was not effective, right? So I don't think you can give it to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he
mean, it wasn't his fault. But yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I'm at, man. And then TJ.
Oh boy.
And I'm with TJ on this. Harsh words from TJ.
TJ was on fire at that elimination.
A couple of times. Like, TJ telling contestants to just shut up.
The best part of the elimination was when Fessy and Josh are going at it, and first TJ took out his phone. Did you catch that?
Like, I did not.
They're yelling at each other, and TJ just like sighs, shakes his head, and pulls his phone out of his pocket and starts looking at it.
Great. Oh, man. I can't believe I missed that shot.
Go back and watch the elimination again. So he pulls out his phone. He's looking at his phone. They're still yelling at each other. He finally goes, can everyone be quiet? No one stops talking. Guys, be quiet. Nobody stops. Still yelling. Josh is going berserk. And he just goes, hey, shut up. Fuck. And the fuck, which of course we don't even hear, really tied it together for me. Just like, enough already with you assholes. And then at the end, when Huey acted like a jackass, he was like, hey, you know, there's a way to win and a way to lose, and it's with class. And that is not what you gentlemen did tonight.
Perfect. Perfect. Needed to be said, was said, said succinctly. You know what I mean?
TJ, and you know what's funny? In the middle of the episode, I was thinking to myself, I need more TJ. Like, I was feeling like TJ had all he'd done is announce challenges and eliminations without commentary to this point. So when he was like, you know, when he laid down the law, it was exactly what I was hoping for.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It was needed. It was effective. Hear for more TJ, for sure.
Absolutely. I thought that was a decent burn of the week. I was totally good with that as a burn of the week. But I have a lot of candidates.
Oh, you do? Because I didn't have many.
All
I had was the crack about Kyle's teeth from Amanda.
That's on the list.
Okay.
I got a little creative. She was like, she was just talking about why Kyle's an idiot, and she was like, or why she can't hear him in the challenge, and she was like, I don't know if it's the big ass teeth in his mouth or what. And that was funny. I had two non-verbal burns of the week potentials.
Non-verbals are good.
Yeah.
I enjoy non-verbal burns.
One by the producers when they mashed up Kyle and Devin's faces.
Yes. Just Dial is fantastic. Just Dial the whole Dial thing.
It's hilarious. And also, that was one of the most hideous men I've ever seen in my life. So I consider that a burn. the other nonverbal burn, and I don't think it was meant to be a burn, but we were talking earlier about Nani complimenting Gabo, and they were being interviewed together, and she was like, yeah, you know, he did good or something, and he was like, oh, I love my Nani, and then he gave her the most patronizing head tap I've ever seen in my entire life. He just, like, lightly patted her on the forehead. And that felt like a burn. Amber B got Fessy twice during that whole nonsense. First of all, at the end, after she won and they were all walking out of the challenge arena, she just yelled into the air, Fessy's still messy, y'all.
Yes.
And then
you know, it's such a honestly, it didn't even register to me as a burn, because that's such a, like,
it's
common
a fact.
Part of challenge discourse now, right?
Yeah.
Messy Fessy. Fessy
it
plays
is.
A messy game.
But it was still good. And then she also...
And yet, none of it says registered to Fessy, who definitely still thinks he's a strategic genius, right?
Definitely does. And I think this may actually be my burn of the week. Right after Fessy put her into elimination, they cut to the ITM with Amber, and she just looks dead in the camera and said, man, I need a dictionary. I don't think these people know what an alliance is.
You know what? I'm switching my vote to Amber for MVP of this episode.
It was a great episode for Amber. Esther will have time. Look, Esther's doing great.
For the Amber train.
Esther is the clear rookie of the year to this point. Like, if we had rookie rankings, Esther's number one, even though I love Emmanuel and Emmy very much.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about, like, people enjoying their presence on the screen, yeah. I think if you're talking about, like, game performance, I think it's Esther number one. I think you have to go Coryell number two, even though he's gone, right? Like,
yeah, but
he crushed it a lot.
But that's know? But isn't that sort of like you know, not being able to name Josh MVP because it didn't work? Like, Corey saw the game pretty well, but he couldn't actually execute anything.
Well, I mean, he was in a position of no power because he's a rookie. But I mean, you know, it's hard to say, like, well, you went home, sorry. When was he in elimination three times? Is that right?
I'm like, not even saying, well, you went home, sorry. I'm saying, like, you saw this stuff coming from a mile away, and it happened anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, how much credit can I give you for seeing it
I guess
coming?
That's fair. I got if I, also if I'm going to performance, then I got to put if I can't put Corey two, I'm definitely putting Ed two.
Yeah, Ed with the elimination win, and then he seems to have gently faded into the background.
I was gonna say, like, did he go AWOL in this episode? was he even here?
I think that's ideal. Like, if that was at all unintentional thing by him, I think it's a smart intentional thing.
Yeah, tough for that guy to disappear, but man, he was non-existent.
Yep.
So
yep. And look, where if you're a rookie right now,
on your rookie ranking, just out of curiosity,
he's in the Coryell bag of like he gets the game, he saw it coming, but like not in time or with enough oomph to do anything about it, which is like, it, you know what it is? It's like a hat tip and like a, I'm going to keep my eye on you in the future, but also you've accomplished nothing here.
He's like, he's like Jerry Jeudy or something, right? Where you're like, a lot of promise. First year, you got all stuck without a quarterback, so who the hell knows?
Right.
We'll come back and see what you look like next time. You know
totally.
What I mean?
The tools are there. I believe this is something you can accomplish, but also, I don't really know.
I haven't done squat.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Potential is an old French term for you ain't done shit yet.
All right. Anything else you want to add? Who's to control the game right now? It's still, I don't know. There's still, the vets are just really working with vets, right? So it's kind of hard to say.
I think the broad vet alliance is going to continue to control the game for at least one more week. Like, as long as there is a double rookie team, that team is going in, right?
Yeah. Yep. I think they will continue to create double rookie teams, right? Like, that's going to be
the strategy.
They're
certainly going to try. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
rookies are good at, like, I mean, what's the way out of that? The rookie team wins a challenge? Is that it?
The rookie team wins a challenge and splits up in a way that does not create another rookie team. But that's going to, again, it's going to require some machinations and forethought.
And I just don't think that the forethought exists with this.
Doesn't seem to, does it? Does not seem to.
So, and if that's going to be the case, I don't know. Like, I feel like the first part of the season, it's not like, I mean, because these shows have all been entertaining. Like, I'm enjoying watching it. But it feels like it's almost like preseason almost. You know what I mean? Like, the real season is going to start when the rookies are mostly gone.
Maybe.
Or if not all.
Or is it, you know, regular season versus playoffs? I don't know.
Yeah, okay, maybe that's a fairer analogy. But, like, you know, we're biding our time a little bit right now the way this game is playing out, because these rookies kind of didn't get in time.
Yep.
So, the one other thing I felt like needs to be mentioned. Big T might be getting some love, right? Like, that first time on the show, right?
What do you mean?
Big T getting a little crush.
Oh. Is it? Yeah, maybe it is the first time. Huh, I didn't even think of that.
Big T Manson, I'm happy for her, man. She pulled herself a little Spanish model.
Yeah, yeah. And he is very attractive. Just ask him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's right, but you still don't have to say it to the camera. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. There definitely is a little bit of, like, Blue Steel vibe about him.
100%. Like, he feels like the sort of guy who actually could speak perfectly unaccented English, but prefers to speak with a thick Spanish accent.
Yes, 100%.
Like, I'm not saying that's true, but that's the vibe.
Yeah. Like he's really from Cleveland and he just sort of developed his persona.
Right.
Yeah.
Or he's really from Spain, but he's been speaking English since he was 5 years old. He just prefers to do it with a strong accent.
I love it. All right. Let's wrap it there. You want to do some homework?
Let's homework.
Can I throw something at you that we did not even discuss in the pre-show? And I know very little about, but I happened to glance at while we were doing the show.
Of course you can. There was something in my head in the middle of the show that I thought, oh, we didn't talk about that, but we should totally homework it.
Well, what was yours?
Oh, it was the morning show comes back.
Oh, when is that?
Sometime next week.
Okay, well, let's put that on the list. I didn't see the date for that. That's weird.
We could kick that to next week because I think it's like next – oh, no, never mind. I was wrong. The calendar I was looking at was wrong. It doesn't come out till the 17th, so we have more time anyway.
Oh, and you know what? I'm looking at my thing. My thing's not till next Thursday, so we're actually okay.
All right, so we're a couple idiots.
All right, let's go back to what we had, which is...
why don't we just stick with our plans, for God's sakes?
Which is the new FX show, Impeachment. That's American Crime Story. So
guess which impeachment, everybody?
Yeah, right. It's not Nixon. I'll narrow that down for you. It's not Nixon. I have some trepidation about this because
it's Ryan Murphy. Yeah.
But American Crime Story OJ was fantastic.
And we like Gianni Versace.
Yeah, I was going to say, has been his best work I have found generally. So
yeah, I tend to agree.
So yeah, so hopefully we get over that. Then there's the show Beckett with John. I guess it's a movie, not a show.
Yes, it's a movie
that I'll leave to you to explain. Beckett, other than John David Washington.
that's pretty much all I know. I guess he's a tourist with his lady friend, and something happens to her, and he becomes an action hero. Is the best understanding of it I could provide in 15 seconds.
Okay, and then there's a new season of Billions that starts Sunday. We'll probably briefly discuss that. It's Billions. You know what I mean? So you know you love it at this point.
Yeah, I hope you love it. And like you said to me before the show, it's not only is it just Billions again, it's in fact the continuation of the season of Billions we were just watching, which as I think about it and talk about it out loud, I'm realizing perhaps I'm going to have to watch the last episode of to get myself back into.
Yeah, just remember Corey Stoll showed up and right as the rival billionaire. That was
in the season, right? Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I remember that he started the season and is like the guy who's supposed to be the friendly billionaire.
yeah, he's supposed to be. I think it's fair enough. Yeah, for sure.
He is attempting to project the image of the friendly billionaire.
I saw Magic Johnson tweeting about Billions the other day, and I was like, I'm like, this is the least surprising rave ever.
Did he say Billions is a show that stars Paul Giamatti and the other guy?
It's about the inner workings of rich people.
Magic Johnson exclusively tweeting established facts is one of my favorite internet memes.
Yeah. Magic Johnson and the proposed Magic Johnson Stephen A. Smith Wilbon countdown, it's just gonna make faces melt, right? Like it's just
who is the poor bastard that has to host that?
Oh, I think Stephen A.'s gonna host it. I think that's what's gonna happen. It's Stephen A.'s world, clearly, right? So
yeah, but does he want to do all that shit? I would guess not.
I think he does. Oh, I think he does.
No, you're misunderstanding me. I'm not talking about all the different roles. I'm talking about all the crap that you have to do as a desk host for a studio show.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know, and ESPN's obviously their studio shows have sort of been famously rigid the last few years, but I think they just give Stephen A. the keys. I really do. You know
what
I mean?
I don't know, more like inside
if he's the host, you know what I mean? Where it's like, all right, guys, stretch it out for 9 minutes.
I disagree with that, though. That's what EJ's for. They need an EJ. But
they probably do, but that doesn't mean they're going to get one.
No, you're right. You're right. You're right. But if they wanted to be like inside, they need an EJ. I the combination of Wilbon and Stephen A. on a panel makes me happy. I don't know what Magic adds, but I'd watch to see.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're hoping. I have zero interest in it other than the car wreck nature of it.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I find Inside the NBA, I think it jumped the shark at least 5 years ago.
Interesting. Inside the NBA to me
as a basketball show, I should say. It jumped the shark as a basketball show.
Like, it's almost like wrestling or something, right? Like,
yep.
Like, I'm not watching I think Inside the NBA is fantastic, and I will soak it up, but I'm not watching it for the basketball analysis. You know what I mean? Like it to me, it's just an entertainment show, right? I like the three of those guys talking, even if I don't agree with what they're saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what it is for me. I'm here for Gone Fishing and Races to the Table and Charles's Guarantee Button.
Right.
And even the stuff, you know, even when he says, you know, when Charles is like, the Milwaukee Bucks are a bunch of idiots, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Sometimes that's right dead on. And sometimes, It's completely off, and I don't really care either. You know what I mean? Like, I just like to hear him say it. So, and I guess this show could have that. I'm just, you know, I'm the last guy in America aboard the Stephen A. train, apparently. So I'm, it doesn't have the same appeal for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I'm aboard the train per se, but like, you know, it's a bit, and I get the bit. Is it really a more offensive bit than what Charles is doing? I would argue no.
No, I don't think it's an offensive bit. I just don't enjoy the bit. Right. That's where, like, right. Yeah. Like, I just don't think it's a very good bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm clearly in the deep minority on that one.
Yeah, I think so. Well, yeah. I think particularly you're in the minority in terms of, like, realizing it's a bit and just being, like, not interested as opposed to, like, hating it. You know?
And I think
there's a decent portion of people.
Hating it is part of the bit, right? Isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Like, I think what you're like seeing the bit and not being part of the bit, it makes you pretty unique. Because I think most people who see the bit either hate it with a fiery passion and then end up watching it and yelling about it.
Yeah. Or they're just it. Or they're in the. They either love the bit or they respect the bit. You know what I mean? And I'm kind of either. So, yeah. All right. Well, that's Stephen A. Let's get out of here.
Okay, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.